Reagan and Hagman Report. So glad you're joining us. So glad that, well, thank you for your belief and your trust in us. Folks, please go to my Twitter feed at HagmanPI or go to HomelandSecurityUS.com. I'm asking you a favor. If you didn't catch the beginning of the program, I'm asking you a favor. There's an article there. I'd like you to spread that around. There are two photographs, two images at the bottom of that. I gave you the context for the images. Bottom, there's two images. Take a look at those images. I'm asking for anyone with information about those images to send that information to the studio at Hagman and Hagman PI. Or HagmanandHagman.com. You'll see the information in that. You can either go to my Twitter, personal Twitter feed, or HomelandSecurityUS.com, but please spread that around. We're asking for your help. It's self-explanatory, but just I want to warn you, the images are a little bit difficult to look at. All right, so also, folks, WorldNet Daily Superstore, promo code Hagman, all products, WorldNet Super, WorldNet Daily, WND, I'll get it right, WND Superstore, promo code Hagman, Muslim Mafia from last week, Philip Haney's book, I mean, all sorts of books. Go to WND Superstore, use promo code Hagman for your purchases. Thank you. Joe, I'm going to toss it to you.
Back with us is a return guest who's been on a number of times in the past, Mr. Gary Hunt. Folks, if you remember, he was arrested back in April for what they said was divulging informants' names, even though this was already out in open court. It's a very interesting case, and there's some updates that Mr. Hunt is here to talk with us about tonight. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for inviting me back.
Absolutely. Your story is definitely a very interesting one, a troubling one. And folks, Gary's website, outpost-of-freedom.com, outpost-of-freedom with a hyphen between the words .com is the website. And you can check out the latest story up there, Liberty or Laws, Justice or Despotism, and bookmark his site. Gary, what's new with you?
Well, the government's responded, as far as my case, the government has responded timely, and we're due by Friday, and I spoke with my attorneys today, and both of them pro bono, Paul Boylan in California and Michael Rose in Portland. And the government's case is weaker now than it was before. It all depends on the judge. We're talking about contempt of court, not a criminal charge. So the degree of discretion of Judge Anna Brown is unlimited. And so it's a matter of giving her enough information to realize that she only way out of the corner is the path that we don't paint. And that's the approach we're taking on it. Government will have 2 weeks to respond after we file on Friday, and then on August 23rd will be the next hearing. Now, so that's where we are. You know, we're in legal limbo waiting for things to happen with the case.
Okay. And you said you spoke with your lawyers. What you said, and also that there's wide latitude of what could happen. Did they tell you what to expect or to expect certain things? Worst case scenario, best case scenario?
Putting it simply, when the government filed their memorandum, they offered that they would drop everything if I would take the offending material off my webpage. And my response was, there's a principle involved here. So they're backing down. I think they realize how weak their case is, and then their memorandum didn't have anything with substance in it, and it seems the case law seems to be on our side. Interestingly, though, the whole idea of case law, in Federalist Papers, I think it was Madison, wrote that laws are rules of action, and I relied heavily on New York Times versus United States versus New York Times, which is the Pentagon Papers, as an authority for press to publish something that, in that case, it was criminal for somebody to release the information, not just contempt of court, but statutorily criminal. And they could publish it, and there was no recourse against the New York Times that the government had. In fact, the government was chastised for the prior restraint that they imposed on the New York Times. So to me, that's the law. And if a law is a rule of action, as Madison said, we should know what the law is. And so the article that you mentioned, the most recent one, Liberty or Laws, Justice or Despotism, has to do with that. You know, in going through the case law that's been bouncing back and forth in the paper chase on my case, for example, it's not clear what the law is, because it seems that New York Times, 1972, I believe it was, there have been other subsequent decisions that kind of move things around back and forth, shuffle them, and even confuse and confound them. And so the article was written with that in mind, that what is the law and what rules are we bound by, or are we just at the mercy of the government when they want to mess with us?
You said something interesting, that case law is on your side. And usually, as you just pointed out, that is enough for a judge to rule in favor of the case law. More often than not, they do that. And I guess it depends on the case. I shouldn't say more often than not.
The difference here, though, is if it was a criminal matter, and, you know, if we look at what happened in Oregon, what's happening in Nevada now, those are appealable issues. But to appeal from contempt of court charges is a lot more difficult. Basically, I'm at the mercy of Judge Anna Brown. And I believe that she's begun to understand that the government, the prosecutors, the U.S. Attorney's Office, led her down a rosy path with regard to her jurisdiction over me as they presented it, because at first it resulted in a separate supplemental order, because the first one didn't include me. So that left one article that was nearly complete when the second the supplemental protective order came out, where she broad-brushed it that anybody in the world that passed on my articles would be subject to the second order. But probably the worst thing when I was arrested was the fact that the statute they used to arrest me was based upon the statute begins, I don't have the statute number, 18 U.S. Code something, but it begins, anybody who has been released by this court and fails to appear. Well, I've never been released by the court, because the jurisdictional issue still hasn't been completed. The last hearing, she did a favor, really. There's two issues. There's whether the court has jurisdiction over me being a reporter in California, and whether freedom of the press has the right to publish this information. And we were kind of concerned, Mike Rose and I, were kind of concerned that if they ruled on jurisdiction favorably, then freedom of the press would never get heard. On the other hand, if I lost the jurisdiction, then we would hear a freedom of the press issue. It would have to be heard. But what she did is she put the two together. As Michael Rose said in the hearing, it's like a snake eating its own tail. These are co-joined. And so she dismissed our motion to dismiss the contempt charges, but put a burden on the government to come back with good case law to support their position. But this hearing for August 23rd is joining the two, both jurisdiction and freedom of the press. So we're going to get answers on both. And I was kind of pleased when I walked out of court back on last month.
But she's given the government another bite of the apple, so to speak, right?
They put together an indictment that's sending people to prison in less than a month, in January of 2016. They've been trying to put a case against me for 5, 6, 7 months now, since January of 2017, and they still don't have a cohesive case. And so she said, you better put together a case to justify what you're trying to do and present it to this court, which is what their memorandum was, but it doesn't meet the criteria that she laid out for them. So, they can put a case that sends people to prison in a month. They can't put mine together. They're desperate, and they're grasping at straws, really, I believe, in the case law that they're pulling up. I don't know. I feel sorry for the U.S. attorneys. I mean, they're fumbling.
Yeah, I remember last time you came on was after you were released, and you told the story of your arrest, and you went through the issue of jurisdiction. And but as you said, and I do point out, the issue of, you know, the freedom of the press is much more interesting and I would say important when we're looking at the grand scheme of things. Now, if she, we'll just say that if it gets to a point where you're found in contempt or ruled against in the issue of the substance. Freedom of the press,
right?
What is that? Does that set up additional case history against freedom of the press? What would that do to how the press operates?
It won't be precedence, but she hasn't ruled on anything yet. She's refused to rule at this point, except to dismiss our motion to dismiss the case. But remember, we're dealing with contempt of court, so this, unless I took it to appeal if I lost, but it will become a model. It can be cited by others that run into similar circumstances to mine, supporting the right in the case law that we're supporting my position with will be available. It's of record, but it's not stare decisis. But it is significant in this day and age. I think I mentioned last time I was on that when they called me a blogger, I began calling them the U.S. shysters. You know, if they wanted to denigrate me by calling me a blogger, I think I can do the same to them. Because I've been a journalist. I consider myself a journalist and have been for 24 years. I just use a blog format to present my articles at this point. So it is interesting. Paul Boylan, my attorney in California, is very much involved in California in freedom of the press, and he came on pro bono because he sees the significance of establishing not precedents, but at least a model to go back at the government if they try and do this to somebody else who manages to get information they're not supposed to have.
Well, is that true with your case? Was that information you weren't supposed to have?
Well, the protective order disallowed dissemination of discovery. The discovery that I received was some 1023 forms. These are CHS reporting forms, CHS being confidential human source, i.e. informants. And informants are people that are paid by the government to obtain information, to instigate things. There are all different purposes for them. But there were 15 informants, 9 of which had gone to the refuge, and 6 who had never gone there but were reporting information they obtained from phone calls or communications with people at the refuge. The government had redacted that already to remove anything that would identify the informants. So they took the right of the defendants to know who the witnesses against them were and redacted it out of those. But when I got those, by going through them, for example, one of the easier ones was one of the informants talked about a meeting where John Ritzheimer and Ryan Payne were present. And so I called John, and I called Dr. Ryan was in jail. John was out, but I did talk to Ryan, and they both confirmed that Alan Varner was the one at that meeting. So Alan Varner was the informant. But it was deductive reasoning, taking what information I had, who would be in these situations, calling people that might know who would be in that circumstance, putting the pieces together, and ultimately, wherever possible, calling the informant and laying it on the phone to him to see what his reaction was. And the government keeps saying, well, maybe he got some right, maybe he didn't. But I think that the 11 that I put out were all confirmed. I mean, they're definitely informants. But that information was not supposed to be disseminated. Now, I could then write an article and say, Alan Varner's an informant. I know that because of what he did at the refuge. But how can I back that up without putting some of the information that's in the 1023 forms in my article, which is what I did. And that's where they say I crossed the line by putting some of that information out. But the Pentagon Papers they took block quotes out of the Pentagon Papers and put them in the New York Times article. So they did the same thing I did, or I did the same thing that they did.
Exactly. Folks, yeah, so yeah,
I felt the law was on my side.
Exactly. This is a fascinating story. Our guest is Gary Hunt. I'll post it at freedom.com.
Stemming back to the Bundy Ranch and standoff in Oregon, that this case, this is where it originates from, that is still, there's still a number of things happening with it with different people. And we don't hear a lot about it in the news anymore, but folks, you remember the Bundy Wildlife Refuge where the Bureau of Land Management stood off with ranchers after they tried to impose grazing fees on the Bundys. Then the was it the Mar Wildlife Refuge was taken over in Oregon, and then there was the shooting, and a number of things happened. It was a very interesting and crazy situation. And then what Mr. Hunt did was report on the information that he obtained from the court, which
from an unknown source.
Unknown source. Okay, thank you for that clarification. And published it in his website, on his blog, exposing some of these informants. Then was arrested for doing so, and he went to jail and was let out, but is still in an ongoing legal battle. And well, Gary, what are you doing Friday? You said you're doing court Friday, and then August 23rd.
No, Friday we have to file our response to the government's memorandum. This second round of paper chase.
They've okay.
filed their memorandum, our response, and they'll have 2 weeks to respond to our response to their memorandum. And then the hearing is scheduled for August 23rd. But they only have 2 weeks after Friday to play paper chase and try and rebut what we're presenting to them.
Yeah, this is a very interesting case, and it's going to be very interesting to see the rulings when they do come down. What's your family? And I know you're a family man, and they were there when you were arrested initially. What are their thoughts and impressions about? Are they optimistic that, you know, it's going to be all right? Are they concerned that you might have to go away for a little bit longer?
Well, my wife never wanted to know what I was doing, and I had to tell her the day I was arrested. And once the heat of that cooled off, then we're back to the original situation. She doesn't want to know what I want to do, what I'm doing in my office, and so I don't talk to her about it. She does know the hearing's coming up, but it's minimal information. Women are emotional, and she got more upset about my being arrested than I did, because, you know, the man of the house is gone, and she had no idea. I was told by the U.S. Marshal I would be home for dinner. It was 7 days later, and even to the point, I think in the last show we talked about it, that Anna Brown was upset that I was not in Portland. I was arrested on Friday, and I was not in Portland on Monday. So on Tuesday, she started working to find out why I wasn't up there, to the point that on Thursday, a week after I was arrested on Thursday, that's right, on Thursday, or was it Friday? On Thursday, no, it was Friday I was arrested. On Thursday, we had a telephonic hearing, and she expressed in that I should have been delivered to Portland. I shouldn't be held down here, but down here in Sacramento, they had told the Portland court that I would be there on the 25th of April. Now, that's the amount of time it took John Risheimer to be dieseled from Phoenix, Arizona to Portland. So they were going to diesel therapy me, you know, just pass me to Oklahoma, to Brump, and then and mess with you all the way up, and then finally to Portland. And so she cut that short, and I think that's when she began to realize that she's been led down a rosy path by the government, but the rosy path might have thorns in it. And she's been, I would say, very respectful, and is honestly considering whether I've done anything wrong or not. She's not just vindictive at this point. She is honestly looking into it, and she's looking for justice in the matter.
Yeah, and that's, you never know with judges. Obviously, you've talked to this judge, and you can get a sense of, you know, their body language and their attitude. Sometimes I've seen some things with judges in the past where you just don't know, but that's good.
But you know what? Stepping back from this, your case, once the dust settles and once this is decided, your case is going to end up being right up there with the Pentagon Papers in terms of precedent. Do you agree with that? I mean,
well, if it doesn't go to the appellate court, it's not precedent. Remember, the Pentagon Papers went to the appellate court in New York and Washington, and finally went to the Supreme Court. But it's only precedents. It's only published precedents if it's gone at least through the appellate court. But so there will be a model, though, that people can look at the case law that went in it. So it becomes a model, but not a precedent.
Okay. Yeah. And forgive my terminology. I agree with that correction in terminology. A model as opposed to a precedent. Indeed. But significant nonetheless.
Oh, I do believe in Paul Boylan, who is, he spends all his time on freedom of the press issues. I think this is one of the most significant issues that he's had an opportunity to work with. And so my attorneys are working real well together.
Yeah.
They're in Portland, and they're doing a great job in putting together a good case.
Just real quick, did you think that you would be in this position? I'm just curious, in this position with case law, potential case law. Man, this is like, eyes are on you. Did you think you'd be here?
Well, I felt the law was behind me. I read the Pentagon, United States versus New York Times, which included the Washington Post as well.
Right.
The Pentagon paper issue. I read that and, the founding, like Madison said, laws are rule of action. Now, the statutes haven't changed.
True.
So I should be able to publish this information.
Absolutely.
And as the judge said, she's not even asking me to divulge my source. She's leaving that to the FBI. And as far as I know, it was an FBI, this girl, FBI agent, a whistleblower that sent me the information. I have no idea where the information came from, but the point is, I felt that I was totally within the law, and I was not within the jurisdiction of the court on the first protective order, and there's no doubt that I was correct about that, because they wouldn't have come up with the supplemental protective order if I was subject to the first protective order. And the second protective order was so broad that I felt it was out of the purview of the judge to even write it. So I felt all along that they were wrong. Now, that doesn't mean, and I do know that, a judge in contempt of court doesn't like to have people adversarial to her position, let me put it that way. They take it as flaunting something, I think. And I didn't intend to flaunt Judge Anna Brown, but I felt that I was totally within the law in what I did. So it's, did I expect this would happen? Yeah, every once in a while when I rethought something, especially after I got arrested, I realized that this is bigger than I expected it to be, I guess is the best way to put it. But, I can't back down. I mean, I think, I still believe the law says I was okay, and I think that the principle of the right of the press to publish that information if they obtain it, without committing a crime themselves,
yes,
is even more important.
I agree.
We both agree on that.
Yep.
And hopefully the ruling is in your favor. But as you said, if it goes to an appeals court, then it would be able to set precedence. But if not, either way, it can be a model. This is something that journalists always looking for a headline or a scoop don't really. I don't know if it enters their mind the potential for getting into trouble. And, I just think it's interesting that people who are journalists and who want to be journalists to take into consideration, you're doing your work, you're working hard, doing the right thing, and you find yourself entangled in legal battles that you never intended to be in, whether criminal or civil. These are areas of concern for journalists, because you can easily fall into slander, defamation, or get into criminal trouble. And people don't often think about the possibilities for either the civil or criminal liabilities that they may encounter. We only have a few minutes left, only about a minute left, Mr. Hunt. And I know that we got you scheduled to come back. I'm not sure when the next time is, but it's centered around that next hearing in August that you mentioned. Just real quick, in the last minute, kind of a question out of left field. What's your take on the attitude of the country versus the mainstream media in this country?
Well, I would say that the people that think with their brain realize there's something seriously wrong. And I think that the people that don't know how to think that everything's just fine. I don't know how else to define it.
No, that's a great way to put it. And I guess, as you said, it's a matter of perspective. Depending on what people are, what they know and what their, you know, level of awareness is. That's definitely very right on the money.
Superb analysis.
Actually, a level of curiosity. Do they really give a damn? No, they're just going to believe whatever is put before them. Where other people that, you know, the people that build futures for themselves have to look ahead. And they're the ones then that look and recognize things. But when you're flipping burgers, who cares what tomorrow is? I'll be back here flipping burgers. And so it's the burger flippers and other people that have been indoctrinated by the educational system. I mean, it's teaching socialism. It's denying history. It's denying any sense of allegiance to the country that protects us. It's reciprocity, allegiance to the country. And the country that protects us, but they don't recognize these things. They just, to them, it's a cartoon going on exactly how they want it to go.
It is, folks. Our guest, Mr. Gary Hunt, outpostoffreedom.com, outpost-of-freedom.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Hunt. Look forward to having you on next time and hope that the judge rules in your favor.
Hey, thanks for the invitation and looking forward to the next conversation.
God bless you. God keep you safe.
We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is, it'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric said,
it's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and the Hagman Report family, MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow, it's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changelessonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
See, my lips move and nothing coming out, right? That's because I muted myself. Thanks for joining us, folks, on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Really, thank you so much for your belief and trust in us. You know, we're doing our best. We're expanding, folks. We're expanding. Next week, we are going to expand with two new programs. More on that as the week progresses. But I'm going to have an hour in the morning. Joe and John are going to have an hour in the afternoon. And of course, our regular program at night. So we are using your financial assistance to expand, to get more of the word out. Your prayers, your word of mouth support. We thank you for everything that you're doing, and especially for helping us out financially. Let me tell you something, folks. We are strapped real thin financially. This is primarily a listener supported show. And we've got investigators. You know, we are working in the field, as you can see by the article at HomelandSecurityUS.com. If you're just joining us now, there are things that we do, and investigators that there are things that we do. So, thank you for helping us. Go to HomelandSecurityUS.com as well. Check out that article. Please spread it around on social networking. It got taken down off social networking before. Russ Dizdar's team had put it up, it was taken down. It's on my personal Twitter feed, Hagman PI. That's HAGMANNPI at Hagman PI. Retweet it. We're interested in finding out anything we can about the images. If you have personal knowledge of it, please let us know. We do have some information on it we're holding back, and of course that's and verifies the information that we get from tipsters. And but child trafficking is real, and you know, it's interesting how many got an email after I said that the first time from a Christian who said basically we've got no business putting pictures like that up. Okay, all right, that's seriously, is this where, and I know that person does not speak for the majority of conservatives or Christians or Christian conservatives. However, this is an active investigation. We are attempting to find information about that. And by the way, if you want to send us an email, you can always email Russ Dizdar at shatterthedarkness.net. So, but we're asking for the public's help in this. And there's reasons we're doing it. We normally don't do it this way, but there are reasons, and I'll just leave it at that. Folks, you know, one of the most overlooked preparations are water and energy. With the real threat of cybersecurity or cyber attacks and EMP weapons, you got to consider the Sol Arc, all right? It's the only EMP. It's the only EMP-hardened battery-based solar system available to the public today. The folks at Portable Solar, they've designed this product with EMP hardening and expandability in mind. This is a veteran-owned, Christian-owned company. They stand by their product. You can watch their EMP testing videos on their YouTube channel or by going to their website, and that's solark.us. That's SOLARK.US. Look, no EMP bag, protective bags or Faraday cages are needed. Use the system every day to reduce your electric bills while your solar panels and appliances stay protected. Tried and true, these work. And you know, most people don't realize how much, like fridges and freezers and AC and lights and computers and such, how much power they need to run. Portable solar engineers help you decide what type of backup power you should consider and how to pick a good system. Folks, go to solark.us. That's solark.us, or give them a call at 972-575-8875. Or just go to solark.us, but make sure you tell them the Hagman Report sent you. Please. Also, don't forget WND Superstore. If you haven't gotten a copy of Chris Gabatz's or Paul Sperry, Dave Gabatz's and Paul Sperry's book, Muslim Mafia, if you haven't, look, this book is a number of years old, but it's on, I asked Eric during some travels yesterday. I was reading it, rereading it. It's the information in there about the Muslim Brotherhood is so prescient today. It's just incredible. And anything at WND Superstore, WND Superstore. But use the promo code Hagman. You got to do that. WND Superstore, promo code Hagman. You got that? WND Superstore, promo code Hagman. Good. All right. Now, a couple of things here before we get moving forward. I really want to make sure that what is understood here. I've got all these papers together. You know, all you hear is Russian collusion, Russian collusion. Folks, I am concerned, and I know you are too. I do believe that the deep state is going to take, or is attempting to take, obviously, no big news there, attempting to take down President Donald J. Trump. They are getting to him through his son, his associates, and all of these, all of the people in his close orbit. That's what they're going after, ultimately going to go after Donald Trump and take down the presidency. This is going to cause chaos in the United States. They're going to elevate Michael Pence, which is their objective, of course, but to delegitimize the conservative party. And this is the way they're doing it. And all the eyeballs, you got the eyeballs of MSNBC, you know, the Rachel Maddow's and the Brian Williams and all these people looking at and trying to make this big deal, this illusion of collusion. And you may be being tired of hearing about this. This may be tiring to you. However, please, folks, do not underestimate what is taking place here. You know, we had our first guest on from American Thinker, another article from American Thinker, John Sobieski. I follow his work too. Investigate Hillary's uranium win collusion with Russia. We had talked about this. Dave Hodges talked about this a long time ago. And as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, Hillary's foundation hid a $2.35 million foreign donation from the head of Russia's government uranium company that had the business before Hillary's Clinton State Department. This is a clear violation of Memorandum of Understanding. If nothing else, this could be a clear violation of the Ethics Act and some other policies and procedures. The New York Times confirmed Hillary Clinton violated the Memorandum of Understanding, which they all signed with the Obama administration, Obama regime, promising to disclose all foreign donations during her tenure as Secretary of State. You want to talk about foreign money coming in? You want to talk about the Russian money coming in? The Russian money that came in to Bill and Hillary, the Clinton Foundation, is incredible. Clinton Cash, great book. It revealed that the foreign head of the Russian-owned uranium company, Uranium One, which Hillary Clinton approved as Secretary of State, approved to require approved to acquire U.S. uranium. She had to sign off on it on her own deal. It makes no sense.
Netting 140 plus million into her foundation.
No, 2.35 million. None of which appeared in the Clinton Foundation disclosures. So anyway, and then of course, right before I got cut off, Bill Clinton, you know, he bagged $500,000 for a speech in Moscow, paid for by a Kremlin-linked bank. And again, as Clinton Cash claimed, Bill Clinton made $500,000 for a Moscow speech that was paid for by a Russian investment bank that had ties to the Kremlin at the time of the uranium deal. Now, it doesn't take any kind of, I mean, there's, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to see the quid pro quo, to see this incestuous relationship. So you want to investigate Russian ties, start here. And this is what Daniel John Sobieski from the American Thinker was talking about. Investigate Hillary's uranium win collusion with Russia. Yeah, Daniel John Sobieski, you've got this right. Tom Lifson, thank you so much for publishing this. And folks, This is the story. But then, as we mentioned earlier, Judicial Watch, which sued the State Department to get emails, got 448 emails, okay, two PDF files. It's on Judicial Watch's site. The page 73 of the second PDF verifies you've got a foreign national, Huma Abedin's mother, a foreign national, giving Huma Abedin guidance of who to appoint as envoy to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the 57th state that, oops, I made a mistake, 57 states, I visited all 57 states. It's that organization. Huma Abedin's mother is telling Huma Abedin to push for the appointment as envoy to the OIC. That is, and by the way, Huma Abedin's mother, Muslim Brotherhood all day long, as is Huma Abedin, as is the influence into the State Department, as is the influence into the Obama regime. We have suffered 8 years of domestic infiltration by the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the most, and folks, last week, Chris Gabatz,
not 10 years. Said it was under, started under Bush.
It started under Bush. You go back, go to our YouTube channel, please, folks, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Would you do that for us, please? Okay. And here's what's happening. We're watching this in real time. People are being unsubscribed by our channel. People are not getting notifications of our, some of it just happens. Stuff happens. But there is a deliberate measure to keep us down in numbers, in our social networking numbers, in our talk numbers, and in our YouTube numbers. What was that about? A hiccup. Sorry about that. I never hiccup. What was that about? Anyway, so please subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our social networking feeds, and make sure you pass the information along. But
you know, on this line of Bill Clinton,
and Podesta's involved in this too, up to his eyeballs.
I just wanted to say this real quick. Susan Rice was scheduled to testify tomorrow.
Yes, she was.
That was postponed.
I know.
So she's not going to be testifying in front of the House committee.
She's got yoga classes.
I don't know why it was postponed. I'm not sure if the reason was given. But she was supposed to testify behind closed doors, of course. And that is going to have to wait till a little bit later. And what we're seeing, some media figures believe that all this, you know, hyperventilating and sensationalizing to Russia is now turning against the Democrats, where they are being pointed out as being hypocrites and much more in bed with these Russian officials and other government officials to not only work against the U.S., but to work against Trump in the election, which that's coming out to more out in the open. These, you know, the Uranium One type deals, speeches, all this other information is coming back into the forefront, which it's argued that it wouldn't have come back if they would have just left the election alone, but obviously they couldn't do that.
Yes. But there's so... folks, we have whiteboards in our office. We probably should take pictures and dots and connecting dots on the whiteboards and index cards, and it's crazy. But when you look at what took place with respect to just Hillary Clinton by herself, and as Daniel John Sobieski reported in the American Thinker article, the author of Clinton Cash had reported earlier, and as we have reported, the Podesta angle into the Hillary Clinton Foundation and the Russia collusion, the Podesta angle must be investigated. Let me tell you something. Media Matters for America, David Brock, Correct the Record, all of these smokescreen entities. You know, it's amazing to me how like in Right Wing Watch and some of these websites, it's amazing to me how they can get away with the the absolute baloney that, in my view anyway, that is published. But the Podesta angle in this case must be investigated because Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, Podesta, acting as the Podesta Group, lobbied on behalf of Uranium One after most of it was already then owned by Russia to facilitate Russia's takeover of U.S. uranium deposits. Now, let me ask you a question. Given that, just humor me for a minute. Stipulate that that's the truth. If you could be the biggest flaming liberal in the world. Doesn't that give you cause to pause? That alone? You know, after she lost, the googly eyes Hillary Clinton horsewhipped her campaign chair Podesta into action. He came out charging out of the gate like greased lightning, galloping at breakneck speed, sweating it out. And of course, he was desperate to make Hillary look like a victim. And, you know, he did. He wrote an op-ed piece for the Washington Post, right post-election, where he stated that the more that everyone learns about the Russian plot to sabotage Hillary Clinton's campaign, and the failure of the FBI to adequately respond, the more shocking it gets. Oh, yes. In fact, the former acting director of the CIA called the Russian cyber attack the political equivalent of 9/11. Yeah, bullpucky. Okay. And also, by the way, WikiLeaks tax reform reveals Hillary Clinton campaign chair John Podesta continued ties to Russian energy company after claiming he divested. Gee, he lied? Huh. Slap me, you know, what's that saying? Slap me silly and call me Judy. All right. Got Eric cracking up over there. You know, there was a leak in January 3rd, 2014. The leaked document showed that Podesta transferred more than 75,000 shares of Juul Technologies, a Russian-connected firm, to Leonidio Holdings, LLC, which is listed with an address at his daughter's, Megan Rouse's Shannon Court home in Dublin, California. Rouse operates Megan Rouse Financial Planning from that same address. It just doesn't get any more twisted than this, folks. It really doesn't. The Center for American Progress, by the way, interesting, was started in 2003 by John Podesta, Bill Clinton's one-time chief of staff. Podesta led Obama's presidential transition team after an 08, after 08 was Hillary's 2016 campaign chair. The reason I brought that up, of course, is the connection to the Center for American Progress, the connection to the Hillary Clinton Foundation, the campaign, and John, of course, John Podesta, that being his group, and, Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin. Be sure to check out, I will have an article coming out about the 448 new emails and about the Muslim Brotherhood infusion into the Clinton, or into the, Obama White House. This is important stuff. And you know, the FEC's backing off, by the way, Joe, of the, remember how last week we reported about the FEC,
yeah,
right?
How they were coming after,
right.
No,
they're backing up.
Alt-right sites for possible Russia collusion.
Well, yeah, they mentioned Drudge, they mentioned Alex Jones and Breitbart. And of course, we were in that mix as well. And there were some celebratory comments among some of the conservative groups. But the fact of the matter is, we fight every day. We fight, folks, you've got no idea. I'm not going to complain about this. I'm not going to stretch this out. Just let me tell you this. Every day is a new fight with a new agency, with a new company, with a new group, with a new entity, with a new person, with whatever. It's always a fight, you know. Now we expect that. And Dave Dobmeier is great because, you know, he'll sometimes call me up and say, you know, I'm going to smack you. What do you expect? You're in a war. And he's right. We are all in this war. But we're all in this war together. So we all need to gather together and lift one another up and really watch. We cannot afford to be divisive as conservatives or as Christians or even really as Americans, but as certainly conservative Christians living in America. We must gather together, uplift one another, fight the fight. And, you know, do it with integrity, do it with character, and do it for the right reasons. Do it with God in our hearts. And I really mean that. And you know, it's going to get rough. It's going to get bumpy. But I do believe that we will. I know in the end we win. But I do believe that as we progress, although it will be bumpy, some of you might experience some air sickness as we go through that.
One thing you said that's real important.
Okay,
that,
okay.
On Dave's show last
it's
night,
all important.
That we talked about on the show was doing things for the right reasons.
Yep.
And we were talking about it in the context of the alternative media, the citizen journalists, this huge influx that we've seen. He has a local reporter on a local TV station that he found who shares a lot of similar views with him. And we were talking about the age of journalism and how it's changing with the internet and whatnot. And people who do things to be seen and heard versus doing them to get to the truth. And how if you're doing it for, you know, just to be seen and heard by other people, you're definitely not doing it for the right reason.
Yes.
And how the people on, you know, CNN, who just read scripts all day of fake news or whatever it is, how they ended up in that position and how they ended up deciding, yes, this is a good place for me. I can make a big difference here. I mean, I can understand that mindset before getting into that role, but then to see the role that you're confined to while you're there, it doesn't make sense for somebody unless they're just going after money or notoriety.
It's
not real journalism. And if you're going to do things for the right reasons, then you will be seen and heard by people because you're going after things righteously more so than just to make an impression of yourself or for yourself. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's that applies to all areas of life, I would imagine, that same logic. But it's really important that we do things for the right reason. Otherwise, we're doing them for the wrong reason. And
well,
there's a million of those, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's right. No, and we have to. I really believe we must keep our heads about ourselves. When we approach a task, we have to do so with sobriety, with a sense of purpose, a singleness of purpose, and we have to do it, as you said, for the right reasons. And we have to make sure that we're doing it in a manner that is consistent with our Christian beliefs and our Christian biblical guidance. So yes, I do believe that.
I'm looking at a report. There was a 7.8 earthquake between Russia and Alaska that issued some tsunami warnings. But above that, there's a breaking news on the CNBC ticker. Senate health care bill may have just lost too many GOP votes. It's breaking big red flag.
I'm going to tell you something. I really believe very quickly, Joe, the GOP, the Republicans, if they repeal and replace, they own the ACA. If they repeal it, I'm in favor of just outright repealing it. Let the market handle itself. Let the market do what it will do. But the government must get out of the insurance business. Don't forget, we've had guests on have talked about this. We should not be in the government should not be in the insurance business. And all of the numbers that you're hearing about how many people are going to be dead or, you know, die because of this repeal and replace or left uninsured. What a bunch of hooey. Drill down in those numbers, and you'll find out that that's not the case.
And they act like there was never health insurance before Obamacare.
That's right.
That's a good point. I watched a movie with my wife over the weekend called The Rainmaker. It has Danny DeVito in it, Matt Damon. It's about a young lawyer out of Memphis who's going after an insurance company who ran a scheme on their clients where they denied all insurance claims. And this case went. It's based on a John Grisham book. But the one lawyer in the movie who was arguing for the insurance company said exactly that, but said it obviously in a different context in the movie, that, you know, he was arguing that if they issued punitive damages against the insurance company, that it would lead to government entanglement in healthcare, and he started going off on the dangers of those. And interestingly enough, this movie is from the 90s, and he was right on the money in that argument, but this is exactly right. During the first part of the show here, I mentioned a statistic that 67 times they passed a repeal and replace bill while Obama was president. Do you think that was done just for political grandstanding because they knew Obama would never sign it? Now that Trump's ready to sign something, they can't get it done.
Very so interesting.
Beforehand.
Yeah. Think about that. Give that some consideration. Give that the consideration it deserves.
Right. I mean, it's either one or the other.
Well,
but 67 times.
67 times.
You know, they were able to put it on paper and get it through. And now they can't agree, or this is the story we're being told, is that they can't find enough common ground with Republicans and a few Democrats to agree on anything to be done. And now that it's on the front of Drudge, repealed dead, Obamacare remains law of the land.
Well, you know,
if they don't get this done, they're going to be the ones who are on the hook come election time.
I do agree with that. And Mike Rezar, our guest from American Thinker, by the way, if you didn't catch him, he's coming back. He's going to have to come back, talk more about that. But he's got some interesting ideas on the healthcare reform. And I really believe, the end game objective here with healthcare reform, folks, is a single payer system. We go to a single payer system with healthcare reform. It's total socialism, total, essentially communism, or at least at the very least socialism for the United States. It's the final nail in the coffin, I believe. It's the entire wrecking of the economy. But Reed, our previous guest, Mike Rezar, his articles on American Thinker about the healthcare. It's very interesting.
And Peter Chalka also, who writes
that's
his specialty. He's writing about the what's going on with the
brilliant
healthcare litigation and the move towards single payer communist style control healthcare, as he lays out so well in his articles.
In fact, Peter Chalka, yes, absolutely. His articles about the healthcare system.
Single payer, yeah.
Yeah, just amazing.
Folks, we'll be right back after these short messages. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman Report. Stay tuned.
Kind of thriller predicts the future. In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God particle before CERN actually discovered the God particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood. At HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.